wedding invitations have changed a bit since I got married. When Bill and I were engaged, 33 and a half years ago, our invitations went out about 6 weeks before the wedding. I seem to recall 6 to 8 weeks being the standard. I think nowadays invitations still go out about that time, but often these days, the bride and groom will send a save the date card much earlier. And because we have the technology to do so, often it's a photo of the happy couple. It might even be a refrigerator magnet. That way you can spend every day for weeks on end being reminded that a special day is coming, which also gives you a lot more time to fret about what clothes you're going to wear to the wedding and what gift you might give them. Because that's what we do, isn't it? We fret about the future. In Matthew's gospel, this story about bridesmaids and oil lamps is part of a larger discourse where Jesus tells his followers the Son of Man will return, but nobody knows when, and everybody needs to stay alert. Now, doesn't that sound like something to fret about? This is the only gospel where we read this particular story, which leads us to believe Matthew in particular felt his community needed this story to help them in their faith. And what was Matthew's community? This gospel, with its emphasis on the Hebrew scriptures, was crafted for a Jewish audience familiar with the writings of the prophets. They were living in the latter part of the first century, decades after Jesus' death and resurrection, and in the years after the Jerusalem temple had been destroyed by the Romans. Matthew's listeners had lived through wars and rumors of wars. And likely many of the first Christ followers had already died, and a second generation was rapidly aging. And as can happen when the wait stretches on and on, maybe zeal was flagging. Maybe people were growing weary with waiting. Maybe the voices of doubt were gaining a foothold. And so Matthew offers up this Jesus story to bolster the faith and express the need to stay hopeful even while waiting. Now, the setting of this story would have been very familiar to the first century audience. The marriage has been arranged. The groom has been making ready to take his bride to what will be their home, probably a room added on to his parents' house. The day had been set, but the time wasn't fixed. And so the invited guests are on alert and waiting. And here are these 10 young women. Various translations give us virgins or maidens or bridesmaids. They are young women who are not yet married, friends, perhaps even relatives of the bride and or the groom. Typically, when everything was ready, the groom and his friends would set out from his home and travel to the bride's family home, where the marriage was formalized. There would be some celebration there. Then the couple would leave, return to his home, accompanied by a festive procession, singing and cheering and lots of joy. These bridesmaids have an important job. They are to be part of the processional, part of the festivities. But as the hours pass and day turns to dusk, the women grow drowsy and drift off to sleep. All of them, all 10. Falling asleep is not the flaw that makes 5 of these women foolish. When the groom arrives, the watchman calls out and the girls wake, and 5 of them discover there is an oil crisis. 5 of them didn't bring extra oil, and their lamps are flickering faintly and ready to fail completely. So they ask their girlfriends to share. Now, wouldn't you expect Jesus to tell a parable here about how sharing is caring, and if those who have give to those who do not have, there's enough for everyone? That's what I have been conditioned to expect from Jesus. That's what the Sermon on the Mount taught me. But that is not how this story goes. The 5 who brought extra say to those who did not, "Go buy your own." So the 5 who were caught up short go to do just that. Where they find a purveyor of fine lamp oil at midnight is beside the point. They find oil, but when they return, the door is locked and the bridegroom won't let them in. Huh. And he says to them, I do not know you. But clearly he and or his bride do know them. So what's really going on here? Episcopal priest and author Richard Capon says, maybe what determines wisdom and foolishness is not what's in our lamps, but rather whose voice we listen to. All 10 women were invited to this special role in the wedding. All 10 were assured of a friendship and a relationship with the couple. They were already known to the bride and the bridegroom. All 10 were already guaranteed a place had been reserved for them. But when the 5 without extra oil listened to the 5 who had jars to spare but spoke of scarcity, they became foolish. They chose to heed the voices of the mean girls over the voices of the groom. Maybe you're familiar with that popular Tina Fey film, Mean Girls. The protagonist, Katie, has been homeschooled by her parents for 12 years while they were conducting research in Africa. They return stateside as Katie begins her first year in public school in the 11th grade. And she immediately discovers all the cliques, including the girls referred to as the plastics. The plastics are manipulative bullies. They wear pink miniskirts, and they don't think twice about starting a rumor that will ruin someone's reputation. Predictably, listening to the mean girl voices does not end well for the girls in the film. Nor does listening to mean-spirited voices in this world serve us well. This parable invites us to choose who we listen to. And I choose to listen to the voice of the bridegroom, which we also sometimes call the voice of truth. I choose to listen to the voice that says a world at war is not the kingdom God imagined, and it is not the way the world will always be. I choose to follow the voice that counsels peace and reconciliation and seeks a just end to conflict, not retaliation or revenge. I choose the voice that says one day the world will know peace, and in the meantime, I can know peace in my own heart and can work toward peaceful and just resolutions in my own life. I choose to listen to the voice that says poverty and scarcity are not the vision God intended for us to live into. I choose to believe that no child should go to bed hungry. No mentally ill person should wind up homeless. No military veteran should be left to beg in the streets. No elderly soul should have to choose between food and medication and heat for their home. I choose to believe that God's economic vision for the world has abundance for all. And I can do my part in living into that vision. And I choose to listen to the voice that says God created beautiful, endless variety in all the peoples and nations of the earth. And no person should be treated as less than because of the color of their skin or the language they speak or the religion they practice or the clothes they choose to wear or the person they fall in love with. And I choose to listen to the voice that says, I am already accepted, and I am already invited to the feast, not because of anything I have done, but because I am already loved for who I am. Joshua told the people of Israel to follow God and serve God alone. Throw away the foreign gods that are among you, and yield your hearts to the Lord. Choose wisdom. Ignore the mean girl voices. Don't let fear and doubt rob you of the joy of God's wedding feast. Practice trusting in God. Live in hope. Embrace the joyous signs of God's kingdom, which we find right here, right now. You know the bridegroom, and the bridegroom knows you. Let that be enough. Amen.